Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
You go on. Give him that girl. He ain't gonna kill her, you know. He's just gonna do things to her. Probably take out one of her eyes. Both of them, most likely. You'd let that happen for a shot. You're cold as ice, Officer Friendly. You're gonna need wire, not rope. Wire, nothing she could chew through. You know something? You're right. I don't know why I do the things I do. Never did. I'm a damn mystery to me.
Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm a damn mystery to me. I'm Lucy.
you're pretty unpredictable, I'd say. And this is The Cast of Us, episode 615.
And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, season 3, episode 15, This Sorrowful Life.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It really is.
No, it is a sad time. It's a stinker.
I'm feeling pretty good. Thanks to Peter for stepping in last week. I want to say I loved your episode. It was really fun to listen to.
Oh, thank you. We had fun. It was fun to podcast together again.
And I had not really remembered that episode was one that most people didn't like, because I liked it. I remember even thinking back then, oh, this is different. It's like stalker time, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a horror movie thing, which you and Peter did talk about, and we don't usually see that exact setup in The Walking Dead, so I thought it was pretty thrilling. I liked it.
Yeah, it was one of those ones I did feel it suffered from knowing what happens at the end.
And yeah, that
was
it's
it.
Sad.
I re-listened to the pod, and I was like, yeah, my whole problem with this episode really is it's all for nothing. You know what I mean? Like at the end, you're like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, that does feel like a horror movie a lot of the time too. They don't have happy endings, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's a real bummer.
Yeah. Unless you don't like Andrea, then you're like, good. No,
just kidding. And you're like, fuck yeah. Torture chamber.
I remember back then, because, you know, in the comic, the governor famously tortures Michonne, and it's horrible. And
awful.
We see him getting the torture chair ready for the last few episodes, because this is Walking Dead's drag everything out until the end period, which lasted pretty much the whole show.
Which lasted till the end.
But anyway, I remember kind of as a joke, I was like, oh, there's the torture chair, like that. And somebody wrote in really offended by that. Like, Jason sounded really excited about the possible torture of a woman, and I felt so bad. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was insensitive. And then that person wrote back and goes, oh, it was no big deal. I can't believe you actually responded to me. You're like, well, thanks for making me feel like shit. Jesus.
And that person was Robert Kirkman.
Was Lucy Hinney. No, I'm just kidding.
It was me. Yay. I remember, though, thinking about you saying that, I remember being at a panel at a Walker Stalker, or it was an interview we did, but it was Charlie Adlard being interviewed. And it was the one thing he said.
Or a dream you had. It was one of those three.
It was a dream. It was something. Maybe I made it up. I don't know. It could have happened. It might not have been Charlie Adler. It might have been my mailman. Who's to say? But he said that was the one part of the comic he found disturbing to write and to to produce was the Michonne stuff. That and Carl's Eye, although he was like, with Carl's Eye, I had just had to do a lot of gnarly research into like medical stuff.
He had to look at pictures of people for all that.
Yeah. And I remember him being like, oh, yeah, no, no thanks.
Yeah. Robert, do we really have to do this?
Yeah. Do we have to do this? This is bleak. Like, yeah, not good.
All right. Well, let's get into this one. Season 3, episode 15, The Sorrowful Life, plot summary. Would you like to read the plot summary?
Yes, I would. Rick decides to give Michonne to the governor against Herschel and Darrell's judgment. After enlisting Merle's help, Rick changes his mind, but Merle has already taken Michonne to fulfill the deal. Rick comes clean to the group and resigns leadership, delegating the major decisions to a vote. Merle decides to release Michonne and sabotages the governor's men. The governor kills Merle and leaves him to reanimate. Darrell discovers him and puts him down.
That's such a, like, workmanlike description of such an emotional moment.
Hey Siri, what happens in this episode?
It was really sad. No, I loved this episode. It was better than I remembered it. And also, coming off the Darrell show, it feels so much more grounded and weighty. You know?
I was going to say that, like, this, if this had been our first one back after the Darrell show, wow, that would have been a contrast.
Yeah, big contrast.
I think this is hands down Norman Reedus's best performance in the show, is this episode. And it's he has good ones. He has other good ones. So that's not me saying like he's crap the rest of the time. This is the only good one. But it's his performance in this episode throughout is stunning. Like, it's really good.
And it made me feel like, because I really did enjoy the Darrell show. It had a dip in there, but I enjoyed it. But man, now it made me feel like, oh man, the Darrell show's not as good as this. And I feel bad that Norman Reedus doesn't have as good a stuff to work with now as he did back in this. You know, it's a different kind of a thing. But no,
I was interested to get into it with you, to be honest, because I have a lot of thoughts about that. And like
what? Go ahead.
Just the sweet spot of Darrell not being too cool for school yet, like this spot where he can still be vulnerable. I've written at the end, and I this is going to sound like the bitchiest thing. It's not, honestly. I like Norman Reedus and I like Darrell very much. I think that final scene with Rooker is the most acting Reedus has ever done in the show, and it's brilliant. Like, the where he finds Merle and he's devastated. It didn't even get ruined by the fact it's a popular meme and GIF reaction, which is Darrell crying. It's so powerful. And even the stuff before that, where he's trying to get Glenn to come around to Merle in this like childish desperation for his brother to fit in and to find a way for it all to work. And Merle sort of realizing that's never going to happen before Darrell does. I just think Norman Reedus is brilliant in this episode. But I'm like, at what point? It seems like they then put him on this pedestal. The show does, rather than his performance. The show puts him on this pedestal of being almost unflappable or unbreakable in a way that takes us out of it a bit, whereas this is just so powerful, seeing him break down like this. I'm wondering if when we come to season 4 episode still, if we'll have a different perspective, because that's another sort of Darrell centered breakdown episode. But it really struck me, because one of my major critiques of the Darrell show was there was an event that happened where someone passed away that I thought Darrell would have a very strong response to, and the performance was very muted. In the Darrell show, where can we say spoilers? The Darrell show?
I think if you guys haven't seen the Darrell show, you should.
This is out in the UK. Yeah,
yeah, you should. We're gonna
talk. Don't listen
about
to the next minute if you don't want to spoil. So when Isabel dies, I had a big critique that Darrell just doesn't seem that.
Oh, I know.
And at the time I was like, oh, maybe, you know, Darrell just doesn't react, it's not his way, blah blah blah. But then watching this, I'm like,
well, and in that episode he just almost starts bawling when Carol shows up, so people are like, oh, he doesn't know, like, he's not ready to love yet and all this. And I'm like, it would have been respectful to the character if he would have had some reaction to that.
if I was going to weep my heart out, I'd weep over Isabel and not Merle, but here we are, you know. But that's glib, because that's his brother, that's his life, that's his trauma, that's his family. But
yeah, I mean, there is some truth to the fact that he hasn't known her that long yet, but it did feel just kind of weak in a way that didn't feel good, you know. where you have to sort of rationalize why he wouldn't have that reaction when it would have just felt better if he would have had some fucking reaction.
And I feel like in the back of my head, I've always been like, maybe like there are some actors that just don't sell it. Maybe there are some actors who just, that's not the kind of acting they do. They're not the kind of actor who's going to do a big emotional breakdown. He sold the hell out of this scene at the end. It's devastating. Like, it's absolutely devastating to watch. I just feel like give Reedus more meaty stuff. Don't keep him as this cool guy. Like, give him these kind of things because he can deliver them.
Yeah, I mean, Daryl, I don't know. I'd love to really be able to get inside Norman Reedus's head about Daryl, because I have felt at times that, well, Daryl can be a bit of a caricature, and that Norman Reedus maybe wants him to just come off really cool. Mm-hmm. And so that means that he is, like you said, unflappable, and he talks like this, and he's brooding. And, you know, it's more interesting to me when he can have more human moments here where we see him kind of fall apart a little bit and we can connect with that, right? That emotion. And but I do think he has moments like that throughout the series, though. And like you said, when we get to Still, that'll be an interesting one to look at.
Yeah. Too. And losing Carol briefly and being reunited. Yeah. I remember that's a really powerful beat when they're reunited again. And I felt very surprised watching the scene again, how raw it was and how emotional.
It's great.
And I just thought it was great. I thought it was really good, but it made me curious about what's to come in the rewatch. And it made me maybe reevaluate some elements of the Daryl Dixon show where I'm like, maybe we could have dug a bit deeper, or we could have gone a bit further with his emotional kind of range in that role.
Yeah, but I mean, I just thinking about it, not to get too much into the Daryl show, but even in that last episode, I felt some vulnerability there in his reactions towards Laurent, you know. So I don't know. I think I've this whole rewatch and the Daryl show has made me reappraise the character of Daryl and like him more than I did before. Plus the way that Angela King sort of brought him back for me at when she was showrunner, made him more of a character that I could connect with.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things the show always, one of the very good calls the show made when Andrew Lincoln left was not to promote Daryl to being the main character, to have the ensemble step up. And although Daryl took on more, I mean, literally childcare of Rick's children, it didn't become the Daryl show at that point. And I think that was very well played. Yeah. And in a point where the show could have really gone in a different direction, I think that was a good decision. But
we had Negan there too. He was a big presence.
I think my first point really is just that Daryl is, he's just in a good place in this episode in terms of the character as he is evolving, because he's being a voice of reason to Rick. He's saying like, that's not us, that's not who we are, don't do that with Michonne. But he's also trying to get Glenn to be softer on Merle, to kind of make him understand, to advocate and be a diplomat for Merle, that he will be part of the community and it will be okay. And then we have Daryl and Rick.
That's their couple name.
Dick. I ship Dick. and Daryl saying to Rick, you're a family too, and sending Rick back to the prison so that he can go on tracking his brother. It's just, it's a very classic but good Daryl episode, and I feel like this is a real high point for the character. Mm-hmm. Not in terms of his personal happiness, because obviously it's a stone cold bummer for him, but in terms of him becoming fully fledged and fully someone that we come to love and respect as the show goes on.
And he's very much now integrated into the group. That's kind of been his arc, is feeling like the outsider, but coming to really love Carol as, you know, as a friend, love Carol and love and respect Rick. And so in this episode, he's like, whatever the man says goes, you know, about Rick, and Merle's mocking him for that. So I think that's part of the contrast with Merle, as Carol points out, you know, Daryl's here for us. Are you, what side are you on? Yeah. So Daryl's really, like you said, he's trying to convince Rick, maybe this isn't how we do it, but ultimately he's going to go with what Rick says. He's got so much respect for Rick here.
And I think in a way that's what enables Merle to do what he does in this episode, is because he knows that Daryl will not be on his own and that he actually fits in somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's something like Merle goes smiling off into the sunset like, my brother is happy, so I'm happy, time to die. It's more, he says something to Michonne like, I want to be with my brother and my brother wants to be at the prison, so I have to protect the prison.
Yeah.
But I think knowing that Daryl is such a part of that group in a way that Merle can't be means that Merle is able to leave. And not come back. And to
experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
So you think Merle was on a kamikaze mission? That he knew he was going to die?
I think it turns into one. I think as soon as he releases
Michonne,
yeah, the moment he lets Michonne go, it's a kamikaze mission. Wow. That's, yeah.
Interesting. That's
well, I mean, he gets steaming. He, like, drinks a bottle of bourbon. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I thought he definitely decided, I'm going to kill the governor, but did he decide, and that means I'm going to die? I think there is a chance that that's true, that he just thought, I can't, there's no place for me in this world or something like that, you know?
And I think as well, Merle knows the governor well enough to know that there's a very good chance he's not coming back out of a fight with the governor.
He really didn't
I
think make it very that, far either.
No. Yeah, I remembered that fight being more prolonged.
I know.
I sort of looked down to take a note and looked up and I'm like, oh.
I heard a gun go off. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my first point is Merle's redemption. So I'm just going to dive right into that. As we know, one of the big, maybe the biggest theme of The Walking Dead is about people doing dark things in the zombie apocalypse to protect the people they care about and whether they can come back from those things or whether they can be redeemed. And so with most of our main characters, they start out as good people, but then they end up doing dark things and then they wrestle with whether they can come back with it. Merle's different because he was a guy, from what we saw, who did bad things. We knew he found out he dealt drugs before the ZA, that he was a thief, and he was just an asshole, really. He threatened people. Mm-hmm. He was a racist. He was out for himself. But his maybe one redeeming quality that we can see is that he loves his brother, and he bullies him, but you could tell he loves him and he, on some level, cares about him, you know? So there's this ambiguity built in with him that isn't there with the others, which makes kind of exploring this territory of, can you come back? Can you change? Can you redeem yourself? Kind of unique and interesting to explore for this one episode. It's a great final episode for the character. I love that we're reminded right away what kind of a guy Merle is because Rick sees him trying to find drugs in this mattress.
10 out of 10 Merle.
Yeah.
Ultimate Merle.
That's what I want. Like, I don't want him watered down. I want to see him being himself, you know?
Full fat Merle.
Right, exactly. And when Rick says, do you even know why you do the things you do, the choices you make? And he's like, you know something? You're right. I don't know why I do the things I do. Never did. I'm a damn mystery to me. That's such a great line.
Great. And it's delivered. Rooker gives a very good performance in this episode.
He does. Very
good. He delivers that line very well. Because you kind of believe it's sort of, he's sort of being sassy but also truthful. Like he is. He's like,
he's thinking about it. Like, that's a good question. But that sets it up for us where we're not sure if Merle can find any redemption, and neither is he. You know, he's a big question mark. He doesn't even know if he has it in him, and that leaves a lot of possibility for what could happen with his character. And I think in that space of possibility with him, there's this exploration of the idea that how we feel about ourselves can shape who we are and what we do. How he feels about himself, and how other people treat us or see us mm-hmm. can also shape how we feel about ourselves and influence what we do. And that can go either way. You know, everybody just thinks of Merle as the asshole and he's like, fine, that's who I'll be, you know? And he, it's sort of, chicken and egg thing. Like he's done some assholish things. So people see him that way and that it all reinforces each other. But sometimes a kind word from someone can make a difference. And, that's, I'm going to get into that later with Michonne, but it reminded me, I hope you're listening to this, because Dodie and I had a listener chit chat for our Patreon thing and talked a lot about just how if you go through life sort of trying to lift people up or point out what's good about them, it can sometimes influence how they are, you know? And I think that's what this is all about with Merle, like his exchange with Carol. Where she's like, I love how he's like, you're different than you were before. You know, you were a little mouse running around and now you know, you seem different. And, or he goes, you don't seem scared of nothing anymore. I'm not. Huh. You're a late bloomer. And she goes, maybe you are too. I just love that moment, you know?
Yeah.
Just a little.
And that's a really great moment.
Yeah. Get him thinking for a second. He didn't say, nah.
No. And a woman like Carol, I don't know. There's a reason she and Daryl click so well. And they've all been dealt a really fucking rough hand in life.
This sorrowful life. In fact,
yeah, great line later in this episode. Play the hand you're dealt. I only got one. I mean, boom. Yeah. Excellent line. Excellent line. But there is this thing of like, you know, Rick's clearly from a nice, well-to-do, upper working, lower middle class. You know, the Greens are a very good, wholesome family. You don't get the sense that Carol, Daryl, and Merle come from those kinds of families.
No.
And to see someone who's been in a similar situation raise themselves out of it or to make themselves better, I think is confronting, but also hopeful.
It is. And I think especially with Merle, you get the sense that he's had such a fucking hard life and that he's had so much pain and that he's just got his hackles up all the time because of where he's come from. And so he can, you know, that happens to a lot of us where our own worst enemy is ourself. And you sort of are still fighting battles from a long time ago, bringing them into situations where they don't need to be. And that can cause problems for yourself. But that's why I think what Merle really needs is like long-term intensive psychotherapy, you know,
alternative universe in that Walking Dead game where instead of dying, he just goes to therapy for like 10 episodes. You're like,
And then he becomes like Howard Stern, who now is this total gentleman, you know, or used to be a total prick.
Can you imagine Merle and NPR?
Yeah.
Like,
like, oh, you wouldn't believe the life I've had, everybody. But
I love that. I think the other thing about Merle that I always think about is the burden of being an older child in an abusive household, which is often that there is no doubt that Merle is an asshole to Daryl, that he is definitely bullies. I'm not going to quite say abusive because the abuse in that house seems to have been coming from their father more.
Yeah.
But there is no doubt in my mind that, you know, to Daryl as a young child, Merle was a horrible bully. But we learn through this season that Merle was protecting Daryl from a lot of the brunt of his father's anger. Like when he sees Daryl's scars, he's horrified because he thought that wasn't happening to him or wouldn't happen to him. And that can fuck you up as well.
Yeah.
You know, being the sponge for all that trauma and trying to protect someone else from it, that's a difficult load. That's a difficult thing to bear.
And then he left and then he felt guilty, I think, and decided to protect him after that more again later. Now, as far as how people see Merle, Gwen just sees him as a bad person and doesn't want to forgive him. And of course, I don't blame him. He handed Maggie over to the governor to be sexually abused. And later when Merle said to Daryl, y'all look at me like I'm the devil, now y'all want to do the same thing I did. Cause he's talking about, okay, I handed Maggie over to the governor, but now you're going to hand Michonne over to the governor. And I'm like, yeah, he's got a good point there. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Cause I just think sometimes we don't give people the same break as we do others because of their vibe or their personality, right? We don't give Merle a break cause he comes off like an asshole, where with Rick, he's always, he's the leader. where he so we give him more of a break. But I wish we could just look at things more objectively with people sometimes.
Yeah. That comes up a lot in this episode, I think, with relativism of what you would do to protect the people you know and love. Like mm-hmm. when Herschel says, "Girls, what I wouldn't do to keep you safe." Yeah, it's true. Like, objectivity goes out the window when it's about that.
And so just sort of how we're shaped by how others see us and all of that, and how we choose who we are by what we do. And Merle is looking to change how people see him. I think he, like, as you said, he says, I want to be with my brother. My brother wants to be in the prison. This little trip, maybe it'll keep that place standing. If I pull it off, maybe all is forgiven. I don't know if he means all, I guess he means all is forgiven with everybody else, so that he'll, because mm-hmm. Daryl's already forgiven him, so he's looking for redemption, absolution, forgiveness. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that he's doing a bad thing here, giving Michonne over. And
he, of all people, knows how bad. Like, he says to Rick, he's like, you know he will torture her, you know he will do this.
He's gonna scoop her eyeballs out.
Yeah.
And so Michonne then gets him thinking about actually being a better person. And when Merle tells her he's killed 16 men, and then she digs a little deeper and finds out that that was all after he met the governor. And mm-hmm. so she's kind of showing him that he's become a worse version of himself because of the governor. But she says, you know, we can go back, both of us, we can just go back. She means, I think, literally turn the car around and go back to the prison, but also that Merle can go back to being the person he was before he did mm-hmm. those bad things. And after she says that, that's when he lets her go. And he goes, I can't go back. Don't you understand that? I can't. She says, why? And he doesn't answer. He cuts her loose. And that's a powerful moment. And says, you go back with them. Get ready for what's next. I got something I got to do on my own. But I think he knew that the governor would torture her. And so in the end, he decides to step up and do the honorable thing of letting her go, sparing her from the governor, and instead going on this probable suicide mission. And I think he can't go back to the prison because he does want to go back to being a better person. He wants that absolution, that forgiveness. And the only way he can get that is to go on by himself and try to do the right thing and kill the governor, the one who sort mm-hmm. of pushed him to become an even worse version of himself than the Merle that we first met, you know, who hadn't killed anyone mm-hmm. yet, but now he's killed 16 guys. So he's decided to either be a full on hero or die trying.
Yeah.
And, and that's probably the best thing we've ever seen him do. And then, when they fight, it's like no contest. The governor bites a couple of his fingers off. Merle says, I ain't gonna beg. And no,
I ain't gonna beg.
But he died. It was tragic, but he died being his best self, I guess, with dignity, mm-hmm. you know? And, I hope that everyone appreciates what he tried to do. Yeah. I was thinking if he succeeded in killing the governor and lived through it, would he have been a changed man like Carol is a changed woman? And we can't know, but I'm kind of doubtful because, like I was saying, he has had such a rough life. He has a lot of demons. He's his own worst enemy. And he trips himself up, and I just think with Carol, she just needed Ed out of the picture so she could bloom. But for mm-hmm. Merle, he would need to get his own self out of the way. You know, he'd need that extensive psychotherapy.
He is in his own way a lot. Yeah. And that being a mystery to himself, that lends to that in a huge way.
So maybe this, you know, because there isn't an opportunity to get that therapy, maybe this was the best thing for him. I don't know. Maybe that's too harsh to say. I don't know.
It's hard to imagine him coexisting with everyone at the prison.
Yeah.
It allowed Daryl to have a better life, I guess.
Yeah. And if he had just sort of stayed around and become a watered down goody version of himself, I don't think that would have been a very good story, maybe. I don't know.
It's what happened with Negan.
I was gonna say,
it's a good thing they didn't try that with any other villains. Oh wait.
Yeah. That's a good
they
point.
Didn't. Oh, didn't boy. You know that Merle used to coach Little League? I'm like, oh. Okay. Yeah, no, I agree. I think both Michael Rooker and Norman Reedus give really good performances in this. Everyone in this episode is on their absolute top game.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Rooker is one of the best character Zeds that we see. They barely give him any zombie makeup. They keep him very grounded. But it's just that moment where he sees Daryl and the eating noises are just amplified, and it's one of the most powerful turns I think that we see after Sophia, is to see a member of the cast that way.
Yeah. And they did that so little, and I've kind of criticized that because it's one of my favorite things about zombies is that someone that you cared about suddenly is this monster, and it's so tragic. But maybe on the other hand, or on the bright side, it is a good thing that they did it so little, where they had someone that we cared about turn into a zombie, because when they
Yeah.
do it's very powerful, like
It's
this.
a nasty, nasty put down as well. Like Daryl really goes
Oh,
for it. He
yeah.
takes out a lot of rage on him, which I'd forgotten about and is
Me
very
too.
powerful because that's clearly years of abuse and torment coming out there.
Yeah, and it's I think probably intentional parallel to how Carol was when she had to kill Zombie Ed.
Yeah.
Same thing,
It's
just
rare.
mixed emotions, but a lot of just rage coming out, you know?
A very manifesting way of dealing with your trauma, killing it literally. I thought the scene with him and Rick is very powerful. Rick almost coming to try and get someone's blessing because Herschel and Daryl aren't giving it, and Rick knows in his heart that it's not good. So he sort of turns to Merle in the way that he might have turned to Shane at one point to get reassurance about a
Yeah.
brutal decision. And Merle tells it to him like it is about the torture and advises him to get wire, not rope, so that she can't bite her way out. Which is just, it's just really harrowing. And then there's this scene with Merle and Daryl in. Now, Peter and I had a very long debate about what room it was they were in. Peter thought it was a male room. I thought it was a generator room, but I don't think it's the generator room because that's where Laurie died. So whatever room they're in, Daryl and Merle have this conversation about Rick not having the stomach to do what needs to be done. Merle asks that iconic line, "Do you even possess a pair of balls, little brother?" Which I would love on a t-shirt. And Merle points out this idea of needing someone like him to do their dirty work. And while that's, he wears it as a badge of pride, it's actually a very sad thing to say that he thinks so little of himself. That he's kind of willing to be treated like that and used in that way, or feels that he's only worth that. So we then see Merle pick up this telephone and we're like, what's going on there? Obviously, that's what he's going to use to knock Michonne out. So this is like a weird observation. I really enjoy Merle and Michonne together because there is this like playfulness to their interactions. I don't know how to describe it. They just have really good chemistry. It's almost like she's teasing him a lot
She's
of the time. I
chill.
can't put my finger on it. She's chill.
She's like not worried. She's just like,
Yeah.
yeah, this is an interesting situation. I think I have control of it. let's see what I can do here, kind of vibe.
But what Danai Gurira does that's so good is she plays that without playing it like this guy's a fucking dumbass. She
No.
plays it as curiosity rather than undermining him or looking down on him, and
Yeah.
it's just such a cool performance.
Well, I just think that especially early Michonne, she has such a great snap judge of character. She knows the governor right away is a bad guy, right? And when she meets Rick and his group, she's like, "Nope, these are good people." And I think right now with Merle, she's looking at him going, he has the capacity to do the right thing here. And I'm going to call that out of him. And it's kind of similar to how she was with Rick in The Ones Who Live, where Rick's gone off the deep end here, but I'm going to call him to be his better self. And the whole interaction, the whole arc here with Michonne and Merle is her nudging him, jabbing at him a little bit to call him into being his better self, and she totally succeeds. He lets her go, and yeah.
It's a shame they cut the sex scene. I'm joking. I'm obviously joking. There is one point where I did cringe a little bit, which is the optics of this man who we've known to be openly racist kind of leading a woman on a rope, leading a woman of color on a rope, is obviously not an amazing thing to see, because there's a lot of connotations there with ownership and slavery and whatnot. But I don't think that there is
any
doubt.
Well, he's being an asshole.
He's being an asshole. Yeah, he's not exactly like, they're like, and this is the moment of glory for him.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, no, this is a low point. But yeah, I think there's something so playful in the way that Danai Gurira plays, and you see a taste of it. A couple of episodes ago, we spoke about that scene where he says something like, "Must have been your charisma" or something. I could watch the two of them. I don't know. It's not two characters you think would play well together. But they do.
Yeah.
They really do.
And it's interesting that we've also recognized that Michonne and Rick have chemistry. And I think it's just that Danai Gurira is good at finding that with her acting partners, maybe.
She's,
you know,
so good. She's so good at it. And I just think the whole interactions between them in this episode, and even that moment where she really needs him at the motel and she's shouting like, "Marl!" and he's like fucking around with the car. Oh, it's just so... That's tense, man. Imagine being tied up and unable to protect yourself. And obviously Michonne still kicks ass, and we see that Merle actually uses the katana, which I'd forgotten about.
Yeah, that was interesting.
And I did vaguely remember that that katana is actually what kills Herschel in the end, which
with the zombies was the only time Michonne really looked scared. You know,
yeah, because it was terrifying.
Yeah, but other than that, with Merle, she seemed to have this vibe like she had a handle on it.
And I forgot that she bumps into Daryl on her way back, and Daryl says, "Don't let anyone come after me." Mm.
And I think Michonne, my sense, who knows, I could be wrong, but I feel like she could have gotten out of that with Merle by force, you know, at
Yeah,
anytime.
I think she could have.
There's a chance. She's such a badass that you feel like she could have run away. At least at one point, he points out, "Oh, I thought you would have run away." But she probably, I wouldn't be surprised if she could have just killed him, you know? But she's just choosing to take this route where, let me talk to him instead.
Well, she's one of the smartest, most high status characters, taking the time with a less, I would say, a less smart and much lower status character to talk. And it's just, yeah, it's a really, what you said about it really paralleling that journey with Rick and The Ones Who Live has kind of blown my mind a bit, because you're right. It's kind of Michonne's way of operating in a way, is to kind of let people
when
see.
She thinks the person's worth it. Like with the governor, she wouldn't bother.
God, no.
She knows he's a psychopath. No. There's no redemptive... Yeah.
We're done here.
Yeah. But then it made me remember, because she's such a good judge of character here. And that made me remember a storyline with her friend Jocelyn, who comes
back.
Oh
my God, Jocelyn.
And she invites her into Alexandria. And I forget the details, but it ends up that Jocelyn's a psycho with a bunch of killer children. And
Child
they
Army.
Lure
yeah,
Daryl and Michonne out and end up scarring them. And she kills Jocelyn and has to kill all those kids. And after that, she decides not to let any strangers into Alexandria anymore. And that leads to discord between Alexandria and the other communities, because Michonne is just very closed off. And I mean, maybe that's because she's like, "Man, I thought I was a good judge of character, but I just don't know anymore. I can't trust myself. So I just have to block everyone out."
As she stands amongst the bloodied corpses of all the toddlers, she's like, "You know, I thought I was a really good judge of character, but something is telling me
are.
I'm not."
Yeah, I don't know.
Here we
doesn't
are.
Seem great.
This doesn't seem amazing. Like, she's like, "Daryl, do you ever have one of those days where you're like, what am I doing with my life?
Questioning things here." Yeah. That was horrible. I wish they never had that storyline. I don't know.
That storyline was dumb. Oh my God. Oh, that was a classic example of like, "Oh, we want to give you like a cool scar with a backstory."
Yeah.
And then the backstory is going to be, and it's like, no, the backstory is terrible. Like, don't, awful.
I'd rather she just like accidentally scrape herself against a tree or something.
Yeah, she's like, "Funny story. I fell on a cattle brand." Like, don't.
And then Daryl fell on the same one.
Yeah, we fell, and then Daryl tried to save me, and he fell on it as well. What do you know? Like, that final kind of violent shootout at the grain store is great. There's lots happens. Merle takes a good few men down, including Tyrese and Sasha's friend. Is it Ben, the kid?
Ben and Alan, right? I think that's right.
Yeah, I think Ben is taken down by Merle. He's shot in the shoulder. which is going to have some repercussions for everyone's favorite character, Ellen. And yeah, it all ends. I ain't going to beg. I ain't begging you. And then, yeah, that final silent scene where Daryl comes and we get the meme in the wild of Daryl crying. Just a horrible, horrible situation, but wonderfully acted and super, super powerful. Something I don't feel I appreciated enough in the first run of the show, and I do now.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Especially like seeing Michael Rooker go on to do Guardians of the Galaxy and just also having a chance to interview him and get into other big roles that he's had. I think I appreciate his performance more in this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. I want to talk about Rick a little bit. So Rick's back to fretting about his decision making again. And I had forgotten that he totally did decide to hand over Michonne. You know, I'm saying over the last couple episodes, what does he do there? But he does. He's like, we're doing this. We will avoid a fight. No one else dies. I think it's silly that a couple episodes ago, Rick, right after he got back from his negotiations with the governor, he told everyone, the governor wants to kill us, and that's what he's going to do, and we're going to have to fight. And it seemed like, yeah, that's the truth. You know that the governor is not going to honor your agreement, and yet still he goes ahead and plans to do something as serious as sacrificing Michonne on the off chance that the governor will leave them alone. That seems stupid, and to make matters worse, he's choosing that option over just finding somewhere else to live. Like, is Michonne's life less important than staying at this prison? So,
yeah,
it's one of those plot things that when you really think about it, it's like, no, dude.
I'm also like, I can't believe Michonne didn't bring this up at a later date. Like, dude. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm curious about. So, well, let me go in here. So another sign that this might not be Rick's best decision is he doesn't even want to handle it himself. He wants Merle to do the dirty work. So he's like offloading the guilt of, yeah, this is so shitty. Who let's get Merle. He's the one. Then I won't have to think about it, you know? And then Merle, like you said, tells him, you know, the governor is going to torture her, basically. And I think I was sort of like, why is Merle telling him this? I think he's just sort of like, really, Rick's going to do this? Because I don't really believe he's going to do it. He says Rick doesn't have the spine for it. And later, Merle said to Michonne, he was the guy that came back for me on that rooftop. So he thinks that Rick is soft. But as far as Michonne, I mean, Michonne knows that Rick
changed his mind.
Did this. No, I mean,
well, she doesn't know yet.
Because when she's walking with Merle, Merle says, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he would go through it either. So I think, I guess Merle started the plan earlier than he was supposed to or something. Because he thought Rick wouldn't go through with it. Because then Rick seems surprised that he can't find Merle and Michonne after he changed his mind. So as far as Michonne knows, she's agreeing with Merle that she doesn't think Rick would have gone through with it. But as far as she knows, at this moment, that's Rick's plan. She doesn't know for sure he changed his mind. So you would think that we're going to see some kind of a face-off about that between Michonne and Rick. I would be pissed if I was her. Yeah. Do we not see that? I don't remember.
I don't know. I'm sort of like, I might have, like, that huge fight scene in The Ones Who Live, I might have been like, and then another point.
Remember when you
first met. Remember I should have never sold me to the governor, you piece of shit. Like, I'd have been raging. But, you know, whatever.
That's a marriage fight that's going to keep coming back.
Yeah.
You're gonna think
she wins everything ever because she's like, well, you tried to sell me to the governor, and he's like, okay, fair point. Yep, we can watch what you want.
Right, all right, yep. So then Rick sees Ghost Lori again, and
oh, Ghost Lori.
I mean before, seeing Ghost was about feeling bad for losing people he felt responsible for, and so my take on this is he's feeling responsible for Michonne maybe. And so that's right when he decides, oh, I can't go through with this, gathers everyone together, tells them everything, that he was made this deal with the governor, he was going to hand over Michonne, changed his mind, but Merle already took her. And he says, I was wrong not to tell you, and I'm sorry. What I said last year, that first night after the farm, it can't be like that. What we do, what we're willing to do, who we are, it's not my call. How you live, how you die, it isn't up to me. I'm not your governor. And basically, you know, we vote on everything. So I thought that was all interesting, because Rick's arc has been all about, like, taking responsibility for everyone's safety and then feeling so torn apart when they die or get hurt. And I just think that got to a point where he's become just as sort of narcissistic as the governor, where yeah. he feels like he's the only one who should have agency. And it almost feels like everyone are just objects, just like the governor, lying and manipulating them and doing, sending other people to do his dirty work. You know, it happens to be the same guy, Merle, that the governor sent, and Rick, but
employing Merle.
Right. But, yeah, so he's talking about when he declared this is not a democracy anymore, but now he's like, no, we all need to have agency in our lives, and I'm offloading that responsibility back to you guys so we can all decide together. And so I think that fits well in his arc. I feel like he goes back and forth a little bit, though, because later on he becomes more overbearing again. But for next season, this moves into like where they have this council at the beginning of season 4, and Rick's not even on the council. I don't remember.
No, I don't think so. He's just farming.
Yeah.
He's just farming. It's funny what you were saying about like delegating things. I think there's such interesting questions in there about cruelty and the machinations of cruelty and how removed you can be from a cruel decision. And a lot of that, you know, speaks to a lot of political decisions that are made across the globe in every country. How easy it is to make decisions when it's not you that's getting your hands dirty. Like, how many of us would eat meat if we had to physically kill the animal that we were about to eat?
Right.
Like, I couldn't, but I do. So, like, you know, there's, it's such an interesting thing of, like, I want to diffuse this guilt. I want to get people to agree with me. I want to make someone else do it. I want to, you know, I don't want to be the person that's directly responsible for this. And that's something that I think does come back in this show. And it's like a neater version of what they were getting at with Randall.
Yeah. Or when you get to the Commonwealth, that's big in that one, where they have all this bad stuff going on outside of the Commonwealth that people there don't realize.
Yeah. And they're just like, yeah, that's fine. That's okay. Like, whatever. I'm happy not knowing. It's fascinating because it's everywhere. Every society, the good, the bad, the ugly, like we, the further removed you are from something, the harder it is to feel that in your bones. And
you don't feel the cost of
what we get at all
to experience here.
And then you see that with the Greens. You know, Herschel is so disgusted at the idea of handing Michonne over. But this follows on from a conversation, I think, about one of the prisoners or Merle, where Rick's like, are you genuinely okay with having them here with Beth, with Maggie, like appealing to Herschel, like, these are your children, protect them. And then you see Herschel do this amazing kind of biblical reading, which I should have looked up which one it was. I'm sorry.
We need Rachel.
Which is read over Rick doing some prep for getting Michonne, where he sees Laurie on the bridge twice, obviously as a kind of manifestation of his consciousness. And he interrupts Herschel to say he's not going to do it, just as I think Herschel's about to accept that that's what's happening, when he's saying to the girls, what I wouldn't do to keep you girls safe. And then Rick comes in and says, deal's off, we're not doing it, which is interesting.
And Herschel's like, well, I changed my mind too, we should totally do it.
And Herschel's like, what? No, I didn't say anything. And they're like, daddy, what are you saying? He's like, nothing, what? Sorry, what? it's a rough one. It's like we've been rewatching The Good Place, as I mentioned last week, and Peter's like, it's sort of like a very Walking Dead trolley problem.
Yeah, like, there's all kinds of trolley problems in The Walking Dead. And if you play, I think you know this, but for listeners, if you decide to play the Telltale Walking Dead game, you're confronted with that kind of thing a lot, and you have limited time to decide, like, who to save, whose leg to cut off, or whatever, stuff like that.
Oh my god, it's really so true. That's why I stopped playing the games. I was too stressed out. I was like, they were so good.
Yes.
And I loved the Game of Thrones one was, we were talking about the Game of Thrones good. One. It was so good. But fucking hell, they were stressful. I couldn't deal with, I think it actually made me realize that I couldn't cope with having a child, because every time, like, little Clementine would look at you and the game would be like, Clementine will remember that you said that. I was like, yeah. No.
I know.
I was like, don't remember that, Clementine.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. Like, after I finish yelling at my kids, I'm like, okay, future therapy.
Do they look up at you and you see like little text going like, Bodhi will remember that you said that? Like, no. Awful, awful.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about Glenn and Maggie.
Yay!
Yay!
Love is real. It's a really weird vibe when you get your ring from a dead lady's hand. Peter just looked up from his like computer and was like, what's he doing? And I'm like, shopping for an engagement ring. And he's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then Maggie's like, where'd you get that? And he's like, oh, I just found it.
I just cleaned it. It was like my own pee or something. I don't know.
Like, she's like, you got it off a zombie finger, didn't you? Yeah, you gross.
You nasty. I don't marry you anyway.
So Glenn asks Herschel's permission to marry Maggie, and Herschel's so on board. I mean, it's funny because he shows him the watch and he's like, you gave me this and I didn't know what it meant back then, but now I fully understand and I know what it takes. And so I went back. And the text, the dialogue when Herschel first gave it to him in the, I think, finale of season two, he said, you become a father someday, you'll understand no man is good enough for your little girl until one is. And so Herschel had already made the decision then, like, yeah, I'm going to allow this man to marry my girl, you know, and Glenn is just now coming to that himself. Like, okay, I feel like I'm like, I think it was sort of a crucible for him to have to be there when the governor brutalized Maggie and then for him to wrestle with it. And he made it more about himself, but now, and I heard someone wrote in last week about this and had a really good message that I heard. But anyway, he's like, I made it too much about myself. I needed to be there for her. And so now he's ready for that. I'm ready to be there for Maggie. And so he's ready to step up and be good enough to be good enough for Herschel's daughter.
And I think, obviously, me being the like cynical person that I am, I have thoughts about people asking for permission for marriage, but to me this is perfect because it's absolutely the kind of man that Herschel is and the kind of family the Greens are, that a traditional move like that makes complete sense, and it's carried out very well here by Glenn, and it's just lovely.
Jenny asked me, I was surprised because Jenny's a very modern, progressive person who doesn't seem to usually conform to tradition very much, but she asked me to ask her dad if I could marry her, and I was so nervous, and she wasn't in the room, and I asked, and he said, yeah, he's like, I can't really control what she does anyway. That was his answer.
Like looking up from a newspaper, like, yeah, sure. Yeah, like, whatever. Knock yourself out, whatever. She might not say yes.
I liked when
it's nice though. Glenn, it's lovely.
Glenn handed her the ring and said, here. It doesn't sound very romantic, but the way it played out, and she just said yes. So that I like that. What I like about so few words is it just shows how connected they are, that they understand each other without needing to say much.
I love that. And it's it goes to show how untraditional in some ways they are as well, as having this backlog of amazing family and traditions, but also being quite Spartan about things, like in a nice way. It's lovely. I just love it. I think
sometimes tradition and ritual can make things feel inauthentic because you're going through motions, and you can bring authenticity to that, but when you don't have that sort of skeleton there of whatever the tradition is, then it is just all pure authenticity, like pure love right there. And it's so great to have these two characters who are both just such good people in love. That's a nice thing to have in this bleak show, you know, until it's gone. And it's,
I know. I fucking know. And I will say, the ring is like so much nicer than the one in The Ones Who Live. The one in The Ones Who Live is disgusting.
Oh, really?
This ring actually really nice. Just saying.
Where did
you know
that ring
I went
come
on
from?
A rant.
I forgot.
I don't even remember. It's something to do. It was something to do with Father Gabriel. Like, oh, I remember.
And what's her name?
Anne.
Yeah.
Jadis.
Jadis, maybe. I forget.
Yeah. Anyway,
what were you gonna say?
Whatever. No, that was it. I was just like, that ring is just nicer, just saying. Anyone thinking of buying a ring, I would say that one's nicer, but whatever.
I thought there was some nice dialogue and lines in here when Merle says, you're a late bloomer, and Carol says, maybe you are too. I was like, who wrote this? This is great. I bet it was Nicole Beatty, because she does good Merle episodes. But no, it was Gimple. It was Scott Gimple wrote this episode.
Yeah, it was a Gimple episode. This is kind of, we're coming into Gimple's golden era.
Yeah.
Soon, I think. Like, this is, yeah, this is good stuff.
But it sort of makes sense that Michonne, if you buy into what I was saying before, serves a similar role here for Merle that she ends up serving for Rick later on. Well, that sounds bad, but she's mm-hmm. got her shit together, and she's helping someone else get their shit together. And
she's Gimple a smart lady.
Both. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
I liked when Merle said, we got any whiskey? Hell, I'd even drink vodka. I just think that's funny because right now I'm turning into this whiskey snob, so I totally get it.
Amazing.
What you said already, you got to play the hand you're dealt. I only got one. That's very clever for Merle. Works on multiple levels.
It's funny, he seems, the stuff about his hand in this episode is, he seems to have reached a bit of a conclusion about some of it, like a bit of peace. You know, he's like, I thought a lot about you, Rick, but you know, it's not actually anger. That there's like frustration, but not, he's not going to kill Rick anymore for that. He's just sort of, and when he says, I thought a lot about you, Rick, and then he says to Michonne later, he's the guy who came back for me on the roof. Maybe he's starting to realize that that's the true judge of Rick's character rather than the fact he banged him up in the first place.
Maybe so, yeah. I mean, I thought, my thought about that is he saying that makes Rick soft? Or is he wondering, does that make him Rick soft? Or does that just make him a good kind of person? And I want to be that too. Maybe it's sort of, he doesn't quite know, you know?
Little of column A, little of column B.
Yeah. When Herschel said about the governor, he's one man, there'll be others like him. I'm like, yep, they're coming up.
Yep. Just around the corner, girl. Yep.
All right. I guess I just have notes left too. So what do you got?
I think I might have covered all my notes. So I've got my timeline and IMDb dive, but
okay,
Rick says we are the greater good rather than we are the walking dead, which is good. I think we've covered mine.
Okay, seeing Daryl react to zombie Merle and crying in anguish, it made me think about how Daryl in season one mocked anyone who suggested the walkers were anything other than mindless monsters. It's just, not that there's anything wrong with that when you're deciding how to handle walkers. It's probably better to think of them that way, but it's just an interesting contrast when it's your brother. You have a different point of view, you know. Now he sees him as the former humanity of Azed. The darkest two things that I can remember in the Walking Dead comic, we've talked about quite a few times now, but it's when the governor ties up Michonne and rapes and tortures her. And then when Michonne pays him back by dismembering him piece by piece with a spoon, shown in graphic detail in the comic. And we wondered, what are they going to do with that in the show? And I think the show is clearly implying that this governor has the capacity and the intention to do the same. Yes. Merle says, give him that girl, he ain't going to kill her. You know, he's just going to do things to her, probably take out one of her eyes, both of them most likely. That's to signal to his comic readers that, yeah, he wants to do what he did in the comic. And I don't know for sure, but I believe Michonne at this point probably would also have the capacity, if he did do what he did in the comic, to do the same thing that Michonne did in the comic, maybe, right?
Yeah. I think it's a neat way of nodding to that horror without doing it on screen.
Yeah, and I'm thankful they didn't do it on screen. I think the comic can be more intense than the show, and in this case, they toned the show down. And maybe in the moment, I was sort of wondering, was that the right thing to do? But in hindsight, I'm just glad they did that, especially after they did not tone down the moment where Negan killed Glenn, and I think that was a mistake, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, and having seen that, I'm like, no.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's all I got.
Well, this is day 312. This is happening in the same timeline as the second half of Prey. So at some point during this day, Andrea has arrived by the prison and been caught by the governor. Interestingly, I had it in my head that we saw Rick's perspective of that scene in this episode. The closest we see is him catching Michonne in the eyeline of his gun from the watchtower. I don't know if that means Michonne was actually near the governor and Andrea at that point, and that's another point where she could have intervened but didn't realize they were there.
Oh, so this is the same day that Andrea shows up and almost gets to the prison? Okay.
But then Peter was like, wasn't the governor busy killing Merle?
So the timeline might be janky here.
Or maybe he like stopped off on the way back. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think that's right, because, well, I mean, what did they, how much, he gave Rick 2 days to decide whether to hand over Michonne. Is that right? And to meet him back there at noon in 2 days, I think that's
right. If he got Andrea early in the morning, I guess, and drove back, so I think, and then
it was within
back.
That 2 days that all that happened with Andrea and the governor.
I'm still not over the fact it's autumn and we're saying that it's July, but whatever. IMDb Dive. This title, as many listeners know, comes from volume 6 of the collected edition of the comic book series. In said volume, Rick, Glenn and Michonne, having been captured by the governor upon their first meeting in volume 5, escape from Woodbury and make it back to the prison. And the second fact, which I thought you would really like, if it turns out to be true, when Merle is sitting in the car, drinking and blasting music in order to attract walkers, a zombie emerges from a building that's an obvious nod to the bald zombie at the airstrip from George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead. It's wearing the same clothes, has a completely bald head, and also has the exact same injuries as in the movie.
Nick Cotero does that a lot. He has tribute zombies. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so I wondered when it came out, I was like, that is quite a tribute zombie there. So, that's my facts.
Cool. Only on The Walking Dead would ripping a dead woman's fingers off be part of one of the most romantic gestures ever on the show.
Only on The Walking Dead would Merle be the answer to your problems.
To any problem. To any problem. To being the problem.
Yep.
Back, it's time for Listener Moans, Groans, and Grunts. We'll start with a little recap from Steve Brown.
Yay!
Hello, the Cactus. This is Steve, and gosh, time just got away from me this week, so I hope I get this in time. Oh, and so we start with, Rick has told Daryl and Herschel about the deal with Michonne, right? Don't remember how this plays out, because it sounds like Rick is saying he's going to give Michonne to the governor, but I think there's some sort of twist, isn't there?
Nope.
So, okay, Rick has enlisted Merle's help, but Merle doesn't believe Rick will be able to do it, and Michonne doesn't know anything about it yet either. Okay. Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about this. This is the beginning of the transformation of Carol, right? I mean, not the beginning. It's been happening for a while, but we're really starting to see it here with her conversation with Merle.
Yeah, actually, I meant to comment on that. I feel like Carol in this episode feels like Carol now. In this interaction with Merle, it's like, oh yeah, this is the Carol we know. I'm not scared anymore.
Yeah.
And Daryl trying to broker some peace between Merle and Glenn by going to both of them, I guess, separately, right? Oh, now I think I remember. He's getting the phone because it's got wire in it, because he's going to actually take Michonne, because he doesn't think Rick will actually do it. Rick's hallucinating Lori again. Okay, so Rick did change his mind. He's not going to do it. Oh, that had to suck. Michonne being dragged like that by Merle. Oh, and now Daryl's going after Merle and Michonne. He just called Rick family. Wow, that has got to be the loudest car alarm I think I've ever heard in my entire life. Ooh, and Michonne just crushed that walker's head with her boot. Oh, I remember this now. This is where Glenn gets the ring and happens to find a walker with the same ring size as Maggie. I mean, it's just a little bit Oh, so Merle's letting Michonne go. I don't remember this. That was a great roll out of the car by Merle, and now he's ambushed the ambushers. Ooh, but now they've caught Merle, and now the governor is giving him the boots. Ooh, did the governor just bite off two of his fingers? Oh, I'm getting choked up here with this proposal. It's not really a proposal. He just gives her the ring, and she says yes. And, oh.
Wow, great speech from Rick there. It's almost the Live Together, Die Alone speech from Lost.
Yeah. I don't know that why that just occurred to me.
Yeah, oh, sure. And Daryl seeing the aftermath of what happened here at this place right where the governor was. Oh, and he just found Merle. Oh, and it's a sad moment. He had to put his brother down. And that great makeup effects, though, on Rooker. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they kept, like, the fresh zombies had a certain look from Amy on, you know, Andrea's sister. Mm-hmm. But he reminded me, too, I like the style with which Merle got that sort of herd of zombies to follow his car. First, he just sat there playing, like, punk metal or something, and they came around, and he was chuckling and swigging booze.
Give them booze, yeah.
And then he just, like, takes off slow, and I don't know. I think this episode had a good good cinematography. Like, at one point, Daryl's coming down looking for Merle in the bowels of the prison, and it's the camera's like over his shoulder as he has his crossbow out in case any zombies pop out and comes around the corner, and then there's Merle and he lowers it. And I don't know, it just felt like cinematic and well done.
It's a great one. It's so good. Yeah. Well, Jacob Decker says, yes. Thank you for this community. I'm just in awe that I still have someone to talk and debate with about episodes, characters, development of characters. It's just so much fun after all this time that we can still love this show with our niche group. Don't get bit, y'all.
Well said.
I will try not to, Jacob. Well said.
Yeah, good job. I'm glad you feel that way. Andy Fisher says, dear J-Lou, thank you again for the wonderful podcast. You're welcome. I'm glad
you're with us,
Andy. I enjoy hearing what you and the listeners think about this wonderful show. This sorrowful life is about betrayal and bravery in the worst of situations. Season 3 does an awesome job putting beloved characters in sorrowful / betrayal / deadly situations and then watching as they fight their way through / out of it. I love every scene in this episode, and I think it's one of the best episodes in the series. Can you believe that Rick and Daryl were so scared and hopeless that the betrayal of Michonne made sense to them? Almost not, honestly. Merle is such an iconic character.
Jason's like, no.
No. Merle is such an iconic character. Crazy, hilarious, dangerous, and the ending was such a surprise. I think, you know, at the time I thought maybe Michael Rooker just wanted to sign on for one season, but it seems like in panels he's sort of come off like, no, he didn't have a choice. They wanted him to go. But I think it was better for his career. He went on to do a bunch of movies after that.
I think Merle was with us for the perfect amount of time, did what he needed to do.
Unlike,
I think more would have been too much. Yeah. Lily Finkel says, not episode specific, but over the past few months, I binged every episode of the pod except Daryl. I love him, but I just haven't paid to stream it yet. And you guys were my number one podcast on Spotify Wrapped.
We just spoiled something for her, I realized.
Oh, yeah, well. I'm so sorry, Lily. Please still listen to us, Lily. I started watching The Walking Dead when it first aired and watched every episode with my dad until Glenn died. I'm actually the same age as Chandler Riggs.
That blows my mind. That's
incredible.
Because we interviewed him when he was like 8 years old in the back of his car.
Like,
yeah.
I went back and finished the series last year and then watched Fear, had to power through. And after that, I just wanted more. I'm so happy I found this pod. You all have the best commentary and bring up details I never would have known. And also, none of my friends want to hear me talk about The Walking Dead, so I needed this. Thanks, Jason and Lucy and Karen and everyone else. Oh, thank you, Lily.
That's really
cool. Do you know, Jason, Spotify did not reach out for us to do one of those thank you listener videos. Taylor Swift got to do one. We didn't get asked.
Oh, well, rude. They asked and I said no, so.
Aww.
I was like, eh.
Nerds.
Lily, I think it'd be fun if you called in. Call in sometime.
Yeah, do it.
Jody Langridge says, Michael Rooker is such a great actor, and this episode showcased his talent. So true. We had so many one-on-one conversations. Rick asking Merle, do you even know why you do the things that you do? And Merle eventually replying, no, I don't. I'm a damn mystery to me. Merle telling Carol she's a late bloomer. Daryl telling Glenn that Merle will make it right. Daryl telling Merle he wants his brother back. Michonne telling Merle that they can just go back. Glenn telling Herschel he wants to marry Maggie and then giving Maggie that ring, which we all hope he boiled for at least a half hour.
It looked shiny, so yeah, fingers crossed. It looked
nice and clean. Daryl telling Rick, you can cross those two fingers. Daryl tells Rick he's family too, which always brings a tear to my eye. Rick's speech to the group, all the while rolling between his fingers the bullet that killed Lori.
I noticed his wedding ring, but I didn't notice that. Holy moly.
She says he picked it up from the floor where her body was and has been carrying it in his pocket ever since. Interesting. That adds more weight to the scene. It has always stuck in my mind since I heard Andy Lincoln talk about it in an interview. Then, of course, the heartbreak at the end for Daryl after Merle has sacrificed himself to protect his brother. This is, of course, peak Walking Dead, and I will never get tired of rewatching it. As always, thanks, J&L, for the excellent podcasting and just general chit-chatting. You're both very entertaining and make me laugh and cry when you get emotional. Oh, I'm sorry.
Aww, thanks, Jody.
Nice to hear from you, Jody.
Lovely to hear from you. Josie Bowen Echtel says, I forgot Merle's redemption arc, and I loved watching Michonne make him think and reflect. Those scenes were so character-driven and beautiful. She's so calm and collected in all situations, and so totally badass. I want to be Michonne when I grow up. Michael Rooker is phenomenal in this episode. When Daryl discovers Merle, your heart just has to break for him. Merle was a piece of shit, but there were so many feelings there. Daryl just looked like a little boy. Mm-hmm. Another thing I appreciate about Daryl is he always lets Rick know when he doesn't agree with him, though he clearly respects him in most of his choices. Mm-hmm. Daryl is such a vital part of the group, and I love that they fully see that now. Mm-hmm. Oh, Glenn asks Herschel for his blessing and wants to marry Maggie. So sweet, her soft little yes. The governor has really transformed into his full psycho self. Damn, I'm so glad Rick had his speech in front of the group. This ain't a democracy no more, except yes, it is, and it should be. There's something so special about watching the show episode by episode instead of binging, which I've never done before. I discovered the show late, when it was in its 11th season, holy moly, and I've come back to the rewatch committed to only watching one episode at a time. I'm loving it even more than the first time I watched, which I thought would be hard to beat. It has definitely made me less irritated at characters like Andrea and more appreciative of every little morsel of the episode. Glad you're back, Jason. It was lovely to hear Lucy and Peter last week. Can't wait to listen. Bye. I'm assuming it was bye. It actually bye. Just says bye.
Yeah, it just says bye. That's interesting. That's a rare experience, I would say, to experience a show by binging it first and then weekly. I like it.
It's interesting. I have so many thoughts now about how the experience of binging versus rewatching versus watching week to week impacts what you think about something. It's so interesting.
I don't know if I will ever have the experience of binging this show. I think it's always been week to week for me. And because now during the rewatch, we're doing an episode a week, it's the same thing. So I don't know, man. I think maybe when we used to do, like, there was more time in between seasons at first because the seasons were shorter and we would do rewatches. I would do some binging then, but starting with probably this season on, I don't think I did. Anyway, Dina says, Merle's short arc. I love it. He doesn't put on a grandiose show of being a hero. That's true. He tells Michonne nothing about what he intends to do. He fails. Only we know that he's had a sort of redemption. Well, he tells Michonne, you go back. There's something I got to do. And I'm pretty sure Michonne knows what he's going to do. But you're right. He doesn't say that right.
Tells them as well in some way. Maybe. I don't know.
A couple of moments in this episode that stand out for me is the sincere and open conversation between Merle and Michonne, as well as Merle's decision to put his brother's life before his own. Also, Motorhead, which I guess was playing in Merle's car, and Daryl's inexplicable dyed and salon cut hair.
Look, he's worth it, okay?
Then maybe it's Maybelline. No, that's different. Then there's
yeah, maybe he's born with it.
Oh, that's what it is, yeah. Then there's don't hate him because he's beautiful.
Yep.
Then there's the line, man, I just want my brother back. That's a good line. And it seemed to impact Merle, I think. And then he goes, shut up.
Yeah.
Daryl did love Merle, flawed as he was, and he never did get his brother back as he so wanted. No. There was no satisfying reconciliation between them, which is one of the reasons Merle's arc is so compelling. It's sort of like Laurie and Rick left things left undone and unsaid.
Yeah.
Nothing is tied in a neat little sparkly bow. It's great writing. Now, there's no doubt that Rick and Daryl are brothers. That bond is unshakable, and the depth of their regard for each other makes this my favorite relationship on The Walking Dead. That's, yeah, it might be mine too. After this season, whenever Daryl talks about his brother, we know that he means Rick. It still bothered me that not long after Merle dies, he seems to be forgotten. We do see him again in those ridiculous final season montages that play while Judith waxes poetically about the meaning of life, but those scenes were so tacky that they made me squirm. I don't totally remember those. There was nothing satisfying about seeing Merle again, just a rehash of the same material. The writers were trying to make it emotional, I guess, but it didn't work for me. Then the Daryl show arrived, and in one tiny moment, the writers fixed the writing failure of the main show. Instead of a flashback of Daryl bawling over zombie Merle, we get a new authentic scene that is played beautifully by Redis. There's a glee on his face when he first sees Mork and Mindy. The happy expression morphs quickly into sadness. The writing and acting is so good that we know Daryl's thinking of Merle even before he tells Isabel about how he and his brother found refuge in that sitcom. Aww. Most of us have complicated families and we don't always get closure in life. Daryl never received that gift with Merle, but I feel like I did. That small beat in the Daryl show brought me right back to the tragic moment when Merle lifts his head from his feast and looks at his brother with a sad, empty gaze. I'm really enjoying how the spinoffs in their quieter moments enhance the rewatch. And love that we get to talk about it all. Thanks for doing this. Yeah, that I agree. Mm-hmm. That was a lovely moment in the Daryl show, the whole Mork and Mindy bit.
I love that.
And thinking of little Merle and Daryl watching that together, having a good time.
Mork and Mindy and Dork and Daryl. Aw. Well, I see we've got some more feedback re last week's episode because someone, this dum-dum, didn't.
Randy screwed it all up.
Randy screwed me over. No, he didn't. Randy was an angel and sent me the feedback, and I didn't read the messages right. So, Randy, you're a gem. We love you. So, here are the three messages that we didn't get around to reading last week. Danielle, Andy, and Rachel, I'm very sorry. I hope that you can forgive me. We'll start with Danielle, Dement Yost. This is such a creepy episode. I love the tension and the relief when she makes it to the prison that's so abruptly taken away. Yeah. I generally dislike Laurie Holden in this role, but she is really good in this episode. The governor is unhinged. Right. I agree with all of that, Danielle.
Yeah, me too. And that's what I was saying before about, like, Merle doesn't get the same breaks as Rick because Merle's an annoying asshole and Rick is this leader type. I feel like that's similar on a meta level with Andrea in this role because she comes off so smug that we don't give her the same grace for a lot. I mean, she didn't make great decisions all the way through, I will admit, but I feel like if I try to just look at it objectively, that I have more sympathy for her, especially during this rewatch, than I did last time overall.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Andy Fisher says, I'm praying, because that was called The Prey, I guess. Dear J.Lew, I love the theme of fear and courage in Prey, but I'm so over the governor. I love the episodes in The Walking Dead where characters have to face their fears. In this episode, several characters are pushed to their breaking points, and each one decides to stand their ground in their own way. Andrea finally confronts her fear about 20 episodes too late. Milton, Sasha, and Tyrese also face their fears in this episode in different ways and with different levels of success. The Walking Dead season 3 does an amazing job of putting its characters in these extreme situations and then turning everything up to 100. How do we stand up to evil? Are we brave enough? American flag, five pizzas, and a ring. And I think about Milton when he says that, how Milton was standing up to the governor.
Milton. I like Milton. Obviously, I've been thinking about Milton a lot this week. Yeah.
You should. I recommend going back. I don't know if you heard it before, but the interview with Dallas Roberts. Right? Yes. Yeah. It was so good. That was one of my favorite interviews with an actor.
I fully thought Dallas Roberts and the comedian Mike Birbiglia were the same person quite a long time. So it's good to know, A, that they're not, and B, that I should go and check out the interview.
Yeah, I recommend it. I'd be interested to know what you thought.
Finally, we've got Rachel Teal Edwards, who says, I don't know if I love this episode or hate it, but it always sticks out as one of the most memorable because of how disturbing it is. I find myself yelling at Andrea every time, why are you running through an open field? Why are you just standing there when you hear his truck coming? Hit the deck! Why are you going in the building? It's like one of those nightmares where you're being chased by a murderer and no matter how fast you try to run, you're in slow motion. Except instead of being in slow motion, you make every terrible decision you could possibly make in trying to evade capture.
Let's see.
I knew you were going to come back to this.
Yeah, I want to know. Let's see. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to say yet, but why are you just standing there when you hear his truck coming hit the deck? That's probably good. Yeah, that's fair.
Yep.
Why are you going in the building? Well, I think you don't want to be out in the open when you're being chased by a vehicle. So that sort of made sense. Those are the only two things. Yeah.
Right? Why are you running through an open field? Why are you just standing there? Why are you going in the building? For me, it's also, why didn't you steal the truck?
Well, you don't have the key. How are you going to take a car when you don't have the key?
Well, you might have left the keys in it.
Or I don't leave the key in my car.
Hotwire it. Wouldn't you have learned to hotwire by this point?
Maybe, but when you've got some psycho chasing you, I don't know.
This is after she thinks he's dead. She's left him in the pile of walkers.
Oh, yeah. I guess she could try, but maybe she doesn't know how to hotwire a car.
You love Andrea so much.
I don't know if it was just you guys or someone else, but it might have been just you or two people said, why didn't she take the truck? And my first thought was, why doesn't anyone take any car? Because you don't have the keys. I don't know how to hotwire a car. Maybe she knew, but I don't know.
I feel like you would learn quickly in the apocalypse how to do it.
Yeah, maybe.
That would be one of the first things I'd want to learn.
We used to have this Volkswagen van that we had to hotwire every time we wanted to get it started when I was a little kid. And now I'm like, did my stepdad steal that van? I don't think so, but
you're questioning some stuff.
He was a mechanic.
Why don't we have a key?
I don't know.
Interesting. Rachel goes on, says, but it is really suspenseful and a good hour of horror until it ends with the governor magically appearing out of nowhere because once again, he's apparently invincible. Wait, does it take Andrea all night to get to the prison? I thought it was only like 5 miles away. This timeline is wonky. I do treasure every scene with Tyrese and Sasha, though, because I love them so. I can't wait for their companions to die horrible deaths. The way Tyrese says, like, you looked out for Donna, provoking that jackass into a fight. So fun to see his temper come out for the first time. I love the landscape, colours and scenery in this episode. Late fall has such perfect zombie apocalypse vibes. Lucy, I'm glad you mentioned last week that you're trying to get back into the rewatch mindset after the hiatus. I think I'm in the same place and maybe just over season 3 at this point, ready to move on to much better things in season 4.
Season 4 is pretty great, Rachel.
Yep. Are we going to start this side of Christmas, do you think?
I think so. I was thinking about, I don't know, my schedule is going to get really busy really fast with Squid Game coming up and stuff. But I was thinking, since Silo is last time, Veronica and Amelie and I did 2 episodes, one about halfway through and one at the end, that maybe after season 3, we'll break and do that. I don't know. Yeah. We'll figure something out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. All right, that is our show, episode 615. Thanks for listening, everyone. Good to be back.
Yay!
Next episode, it's the season 3 finale, Walking Dead season 3, episode 16, Welcome to the Tombs. We're going to have Karen on with us to talk about what it was like for her and I to fly out there and be zombies in this episode.
I actually cannot wait. I'm still fangirling. I like know you guys now, but I'm still fangirling. I'm still like, oh my god, guess what? I'm gonna do the podcast with Jin and Karen.
Anyway, we both fangirl over you too, so
it's been like 10 years of mutual fanage. Yay. If you want to write in or leave us a voice message about it, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
Yeah, and while you're there, check out our other podcasts. One that we just decided to do because Paik and Daphne started watching Skeleton Crew, the new Star Wars show with Jude Law, and they love it. And I'm like, how about you guys take a break from Run For Your Lives and cover Skeleton Crew? And they said yes. So,
oh, amazing.
That means their plan is to have the first episode out covering the first three episodes of that show Friday after you hear this. So hopefully that'll be out soon. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm excited to watch it. This episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Joe Richard, who pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thank you to Joe. What are we doing? I need to schedule it, but this month's call-in show is supposed to be that one where we play our favorite hip-hop songs. So that's nice. One thing that's coming up in Patreon land. All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit, Lily Finkel.
Sorry for spoiling you.
Sorry for ruining the Daryl show for you. It's fine.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.